providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are continuing to focus on the precious metals sector, resource sector broadly, and some of the junior companies, as I am wrapping up this first hour with John Kaiser, founder and editor of Kaiser Research. Now, John, before we get into some individual companies, there are a couple key points that we need to outline for investors that are in these junior stocks. First and foremost, it was 3-4 months ago that this financing window just exploded for the juniors. A lot of money has been raised. It's great that companies are now cashed up, but even on some of my prior interviews in this first hour, that's not a distinguishing factor anymore for juniors because so many of them have money. Take us through, though, John, some of your research in terms of how much money was invested and how many shares are coming free trading in the near term.
Between May and August, TSX Venture Resource listings did a total of $769 million worth of financings, with the peak closing in August. Since then, the interest has died down considerably. And in Canada, these private placements have a four-month hold. So the May financings are now coming free trading in October. And of course, the May financings were the ones when this market was just taking off, when the awakening was underway. Those will have the lowest prices. And those ones will be in the money. And because most of these financings included warrants, and we have this overarching concern that the general equity markets are going to tank during the last quarter of this year, which of course would drag down all the resource juniors and probably in the interim, the price of gold, as people sell the most liquid asset of all in order to raise money to either pay off the debts that they piled up, the leverage, or to even go bottom fishing by the dip in the big New York NASDAQ markets, because the Fed has said we will not tolerate a meltdown in the equity markets very long. We will print money and we will buy assets in order to keep this from becoming a free fall like it ended up in 1929, heading into 1930, where they had this V-shaped recovery. And then it faded again 6-7 months later, which is about sort of January 21st, when inauguration date is coming around. And then it went down relentlessly for the next several years. There's this put out there that the Federal Reserve will not allow this to happen. But if it does crack, it will have another plunge. And so the resource juniors, the audience has said, okay, gold's backed off into the 1700, 1900 range. They're not putting fresh money in. There's a whole raft of shareholders, hundreds of millions of shares issued, a lot of it even now still in the money. That's going to be looking to exit itself, because either way you look at it, we're heading into a bottom fishing season for the resource sector. That December-January period is always a major slowdown in exploration activity. Most of the results are in by early December for the work done this year. So we're heading into a news flow slump, into a wall of paper coming free trading all the way into January. And they won't have spent all the money. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that people want to sneak out of stocks and have a huge pot of cash ready to do some serious bargain hunting in December while we wait to find out who actually won the U.S. election.
Yeah, well, the whole election throws another wrench into this. But one thing about the shoulder season, we can call it, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, where certain areas have to shut down and other areas are waiting for the ground to freeze to actually get some drills on site, this can be a slow time for the market. You're right. But assay labs have been so backed up. I hear they're running 6 to 8 weeks on even rush assays. So that does mean we are going to be seeing a flood of news coming out from, say, the Northern Hemisphere. Again, But John, is this news going to be enough to drive or hold stocks at these generally higher prices if the company can't immediately follow up on some of these results?
It depends on the nature of the results. If you've got an exploration play that's one of these rethink plays where you already have an existing mineralized zone and you're just producing more similar information, incrementally growing the system better. And if you do happen to have a winter shutdown, such as is the case in the, most of the Golden Triangle, there is really no, nothing to convince new money to buy. They'll say, this is great. I'm going to wait for the stock to go down. And in the Golden Triangle, work resumes in June. So, for example, two companies that I follow are Skeena Resources and SK Mining. Skeena owns the northern 5-6 kilometers of that whole Salmon River formation, which runs for about 25-30 kilometers to the south, and SK Mining owns the southern 25 kilometers. The SK Mining guys had a late start because of all the COVID-19 protocols. They had bad weather in terms of, cloud cover where they couldn't get their geophysical survey done. In fact, they're only getting their geophysical data now, but they did mount a 3,000, 4,000 meter drill program to test some targets along the strike after re-logging all the core. But they've already said, we have to get out of there by October 15th. So they got two rigs there. They're doing this sort of scout drilling along targets like Jeff and TV, where there is the VMS potential. But it's unlikely, since they're not even able to use the geophysics to guide the drilling, that they'll produce like a brand new discovery where people will say, wow, I'm going to keep buying this right as the news comes out all through the season, because we know this is going to go bigger and bigger. Now, Skeena to the north already has its PEA out, a significant resource that has become much more valuable with gold lurching into the $1,700 range. And they are now busy doing the exploration they couldn't do while Barrick still had the back and right, which was looking for other feeder zones, exploiting the Sin volcanic faults through the rhyolite, and that somewhere fed the contact mudstone. But there's all these other lower and even lower mudstone units, which when the fluids go past them, these act like sponges. It bleeds laterally into them, creates these localized deposits. So Skeena will be able, by virtue of having those millions of ounces there and gold probably making its launch through 2000 sometime in the next 6 months, they'll be able to hold their own. And I do not know if they will be able to work through winter, but they have the, the value of the existing resource plus the ability to stretch the drilling as long as possible, because they have a major camp in place. But for most of these Golden Triangle plays, they need to deliver something really exceptionally new based on a concept to get anything more than a blip out of the market. And then it's going to be great for bottom fishers to look at these, study the results. And a lot of the assays won't trickle in, as you point out, until December because of these COVID protocols. And of course, now we have COVID infections surging again as we head into the flu season. So they're going to make these protocols even more strict, which will slow down things even more. Perhaps the benefit of that is that you can keep holding your breath a lot longer, that the final hole suddenly delivers a great surprise in December, by long after one would have expected all the results to be in.
Oh, John, that's going to be a tough hold, though, isn't it? With all these shares coming free trading and potentially just a further drift in share price, I could see a broad-based sell-off happening due to a number of these factors. One other thing that you brought up there is COVID protocols at the assay labs. What about the potential of this second wave of COVID impacting actual drill programs? I've talked to a lot of companies, and they're all doing a lot of hard work to make sure all their workers are isolated on site. And it does sound like they're doing everything they can. But if we start to get a couple more, I guess, nervous shutdowns, What are we looking at then? Is a possibility of drilling just not even being able to happen?
This is a big problem for Quebec and Ontario, where there's also lots of First Nation communities, which are particularly vulnerable because they are isolated. And they've been key drivers behind making sure that their communities do not get infection in them. Of course, their communities are staging areas for the exploration groups. And that's a big concern because in Ontario and Quebec, January is when you roll up your sleeves and go drilling when all the horrible swamp and bog and the lakes are frozen so that you can go in there, move your drill around and not worry about sinking in the mud. And this is supposed to be kind of like what gets us going heading into the new year. It's part of the Great Canadian January effect that usually climaxes with PDAC. But of course, PDAC is not a physical event this year. It's a virtual event, which means it's basically meaningless, like all these other virtual conferences that the market is saturated with right now. So this is a big concern of mine, and a number of my companies are counting on a January drill startup with potentially very interesting results. It's a big concern.
Yeah, it really is, unfortunately. But hey, you brought up Quebec and Ontario. I think that should be a focus for investors, as I've heard a number of people saying that they really like the Val-d'Or area. There's been a lot of good work done right on or along that border too. Great Bear Resources, I interviewed them again this week. They continue to have very nice drill results. There's also a lot of money raised in these companies in this area. What do you think, John? What attracts you in the Quebec and Ontario region?
Well, there's two companies that I'm watching particularly closely in the Red Lake District. And Great Bear Resources, of course, is the $800 million valued company, which has that 22-kilometer LP fault structure, which really was a conceptual discovery. Because what pulled them into that area was the original Dixie property with its 100 holes and a very lame resource that they got from Newmont for next to nothing. They did some clever thinking and found the Dixie Limb Hinge zone with very high-grade, flashy Red Lake-style gold. But that ended up not having significant tonnage potential. But they took that old lithoprobe data from 2004 when the government was looking for a place to stash its radioactive waste. And they could see the linkage of the deep crustal faults feeding the Red Lake District. And there was one feeding this LP fault, and they had staked this. And when they started drilling it, lo and behold, they started getting different style of mineralization, not the sort of mafic-hosted Red Lake style that gets really flashy, but more disseminated sulfide-type mineralization where if gold is visible, it's a speck that you have to look really hard with a hand lens to find. And now they're talking about a potential tonnage footprint as big as Hemlo, which was, you know, 22 million ounces with the underground portion running 8.5 grams. So they have their 5-6 rigs or whatever it is right now turning in that area. You can work through winter. You know, Red Lake is a great staging area for that. And the one that I'm watching right now is Golden Goliath, which is also purely conceptual. Their Packwash fault, it's to the south of the LP fault. It's never been drilled, so nobody knows really what it's made of and whether it has any gold in it. There wasn't any huge gold in soil geochem anomaly in that area. But Golden Goliath went in there, has done all the basic data sets, and now they're in a drill program, and they're encountering all the busyness, the alteration, the sericite, the, quartzite, porphyry systems, everything that, and even the disseminated sulfides backing up the IP survey saying, okay, everything's here. All we need are the assays. And this thing's valued at 30, 40 million. And they also have a nickel financing coming due in the next few weeks, which was done in May when they were still in the garbage can and nobody believed that this thing had any potential. So this type of play, if by mid to late October, they start delivering first at least some gold showing that the Packwash fault is pregnant just as the LP fault is, and then some of the better target holes that they're drilling now, which they did later than initially because of weather conditions and soggy ground conditions. If they start delivering ore grade type intersections, then we have a brand new discovery based on pure concept and grassroots exploration work. And that's the kind of play which if it catches fire, you know, it would go up 20 plus times just to be on a par with Great Bear, which of course it's not going to do overnight. And Great Bear itself, it's at $15 right now. If they're only down about 400, 500 meters or something like that. The Hemlo system went down, I believe it was like 1,400 meters or so before they stopped mining it. So at the Great Bear, if they can keep building this thing through systematic drilling, you get this thing ramping through $20 and beyond, becoming that, okay, bona fide. Here's the Hemlo of the 2020s decade, and here's the little junior with conceptually similar new discovery. And then everybody else, well, where else does it go? What's to the west of Pakwasha? Who else has stuff in the Red Lake? Then you have kind of like a regional play getting a lot of legs, even in this time of COVID. And so long as they can keep all those COVID protocols intact and prevent, you know, local communities from getting infections, we could have a lot of fun in places like that.
All right, John. Well, maybe a place to focus on. I know I hold shares in a number of companies in that area, and a broad area play could be a possibility. But again, this is going to just depend on drill results. These stocks move on the back of good news. The metals price is supporting higher prices, but it's the stocks that you really need to focus on and make sure they're doing the good work and getting out, hopefully, some good news. John, we have to wrap it up there. We're out of time for this first hour. I hope that you have a great rest of your weekend. I appreciate you joining us. Everybody else, please keep those emails coming. Fleck@kereport.com. I've gotten a little behind on those emails, so I'm going to play a little catch up this weekend. John, everyone else, have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. You too.